Well, hello, everyone out there in podcast land. This is the Front Row Network, and we are bringing you another Oscar spotlight as we move on to February 9th, where all the Little Gold Men statues will be given out, and maybe even one or more for this film we're going to be talking about today. We're talking about two popes. Really, it's like a story of three popes in this movie, but we are talking about two of them as one of them dies early in the film. We love you, Pope John Paul. So, I'm here today. I'm hosting. This is Craig, and I have Ryan Lutens with me.
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land.
How are you doing tonight, Ryan?
I'm doing really good. I'm looking forward to talking about all these Oscar nominees, and what a great way to start by talking about the two popes.
Absolutely. You know, this movie was really well done, in my opinion, and we're going to get into a lot of why that was. But before we do that, we should mention that for the second year in a row, the Front Row Network is going to be hosting an Oscar party. If you are in the Springfield, Illinois area and would like to attend, it's going to be on the night of the ceremonies, of course, opening right around 6:30 p.m. We'll go all the way through Best Picture, and it's at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. So $10 to join us. You'll have a chance to win some prizes. We'll also be giving out some prizes for Best Dressed. That doesn't necessarily mean you need to get all formal. You could come in your pajamas and possibly win Best Dress because, you know, we just want you to feel comfortable. So come to the Hoagland on February 9th, starting at 6:30. It'll be $10 to get in. Bring a table of your friends. It'll be a lot of fun. So looking forward to watching the Oscars with all of you. But now let's jump into Netflix's The Two Popes. And Ryan, go ahead and give me your first impressions of this film.
You know, viewing the film, I think it speaks words when you just have two people. Really, this is a movie just about two people and the conversation that they have. But some of the messages that were really brought forth from the storytelling in this film are really powerful. You know, this was a big controversy when this happened. It's the story of Pope Benedict and his decision to step down, which paved the way for Pope Francis to assume the role as the new pope. But what's interesting is, you know, you look at what's happening in our time frame or the time period, and it's just basically ideologies are butting heads. And what's interesting is, you know, this movie speaks volumes about getting together and talking things out. And that's exactly what this movie portrayed. It's very straightforward because you have these two polar opposite people finding common ground. And I'll get to that finding that common ground later because I think it's one of the most central themes, and it's one of my favorite things. So when we get to talking about that, I'll elaborate more. But, you know, I'm a Catholic. I went to private school. I even remember when Pope Benedict was elected because I was in high school, and going to a private school, you know, you learn about that sort of thing. So it just really moved me in the sense getting a different idea because I didn't know as much, but now I do. So overall, it was really, really moving movie, but that comes from the two actors, Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pierce. So, but I can dive more into that later.
Absolutely. You know, I come at it much the same way. I am a converted Catholic. So I converted to Catholicism just before Anna and I got married. It wasn't required that I do so for us to get married, but I was not baptized. So I actually had to go through some baptism. Now that could be really anything. But in order for us to be able to have the service in the church, I had to go through this. And I thought, you know, not coming from a necessarily religious family, I would think about joining the church that she cares so much about. And so that's why this movie was interesting to me. At first, I didn't necessarily want to see it, and it's because I just assumed it would be really beat you over the head anti-Catholic, because that's kind of what I would expect from a movie right now. The church has a lot to answer for, and I'm not saying that it's infallible by any means. I'm just saying, as a Catholic, you hear these stories, and my faith is fairly personal to me. So I'm not sure that I want to necessarily watch a movie that's just going to beat up on the religion over and over again. What's interesting is that this movie didn't do that at all, because this is truly a movie that's a character piece about the two men coming together. And you learn so much about the conclave and how all that process works. And it's weird. I was explaining it to my friends who are not religious, and they were saying, you know, would we enjoy this? And I almost see it more as a philosophical debate throughout the entire film. So it's really the ideas of, I guess you could say it's hard to exactly pin these two men into corners. But you could, in a broader sense, say liberalism versus conservatism, just as a different outlook at life. And I don't mean that in the way, the partisan way that we come up with those terms here in America, but just it's a really interesting, unique character piece that dives into the two men involved in this this first in 700 years that a pope has resigned. So just an incredible piece. It deserves the acting nominations that it was given by the Academy. We have Jonathan Pierce is going to be up for Best Actor, and then Anthony Hopkins is going to be Best Supporting Actor. And we'll talk in a minute here that I think that there could have been a third in that category as well. But it's just I just find it fascinating, the amount of morality that's discussed, the philosophical nature of this piece, and it never truly seems to drag or be too heavy. What do you think about that, Ryan?
It really doesn't, because the powerful dialogue, I think the tone and the grace is really experienced by the tone and the pace of the film. But more importantly, the production design. I mean, if you're not hearing what these guys are saying and how they're saying it, you get a lot of great visuals from location to art. And I really think that does wonders for the movie, because while it may be serious in tone, you're almost in awe of the splendor of everything that's going around these guys. So, I mean, it's, you know, sometimes the topic is heavy, but, you know, they're sitting in a garden where it's super beautiful, or in a maze. I mean, it's just, it's really interesting how they did this. And I want to know, like, how much of these conversations did take place, like, outside or in the Sistine Chapel. But one point I want to go back on, Craig, that you said that you were worried that it was going to be anti-Catholic. Well, when I first watched, I thought it was going to be a little, you know, it was going to be pro-Catholic, like they were going to inundate you over and over again. But what really has this movie, what really makes this movie so good is it's very straightforward. It's like you said, it's a character piece, and it just tells their story, whether and it doesn't really rely on anti or pro. It is their story, which makes it very unique and very worth watching.
It'd be really interesting to go back. I know this is based on a book, because it is up for adapted screenplay. And yes. That book would be fascinating to dive even deeper into this, because again, it's like these two men have come to the top of their potential field in a way. You know, if we're just looking at this from the fact that they've moved up through being an ordained priest to being a bishop, cardinal, and now ascending to the papacy. It's just interesting to see how these two men take these same church teachings that have been around for thousands of years and see the world in such a different way, but yet have the ability and the grace to be able to come back together as well. I mean, there's a moment, and this is, of course, we're going to be talking spoilers a bit on this. It is on Netflix. I strongly encourage you to go and watch this film. It's well worth your time. But there's a moment where Pope Benedict is sitting there, and he said, one of the reasons why I didn't want to resign was because I thought that they might elect you Pope. And when he's talking to Bergoglio, who would become Francis. And it was at the end of this conversation and this week or weekend together. And he said, now I understand I can resign, because if basically alluding to the fact, if they were to choose you, then I would feel comfortable with you being the head of the church. Just really like just a beautiful discussion between two men. You mentioned something about the sets. And so I want to say that they did ask for permission to film within the Vatican.
That's
and
awesome.
The Vatican said no. And so, if you can believe this, the set designers for Netflix recreated the Sistine Chapel
wow.
in 10 weeks. So Michelangelo would be proud because it looked beautiful. I mean, you get to see two different conclaves that happened in the Sistine Chapel. And I learned quite a bit about this going through like the RCIA process, which is essentially what you go through if you're an adult and converting to Catholicism. But the whole idea of black smoke coming out of the roof of the Sistine Chapel means that there was no decision on whether or not there would be a pope or who would be the next pope. And then the white smoke means that a pope has been elected, and just all of that. So seeing the ceremony and the ritual, it seems like they just nailed that to a T. Like they really spent a lot of time figuring that out. One of the other things I was really impressed with is when you think about these two men, how many different languages do they speak amongst each other in this movie?
They speak Italian. They speak English. They speak Spanish. Do they speak French?
They speak Latin.
The Latin.
And Bergoglio still says a little bit of German, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Because Ratzinger was German.
Yes.
So, I mean, just immensely brilliant men, right? Again, it's one of those, like, real think pieces that gets you to kind of, in some ways, confirm your worldview, but then also understand that there are people that are polar opposites that you can still, on some level, understand where they're coming from and relate to.
Yeah, I totally agree with you 100%. I mean, and, you know, it's interesting because you can watch this film and at some point be like, okay, I believe, you know, Pope Benedict, Ratzinger, or you're sitting there and, you know, Benedict's talking, who was Bergoglio. And you're just like, it's not only that, but it's like seeing what they're going through too. And that comes into their past lives, which again, I'll get to later on. But I mean, it's just, they're so relatable. And these two men, they're very forward about their past because they know that there is, that God is in their life. But it's also, and this is what I alluded to earlier, this main theme of forgiveness. I'll dive into that later, but it's just these, it shows you that no matter who you are, you can be forgiven, which is amazing.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the two actors that are up for the Academy Awards. And then we'll also talk about the actor that I think does a tremendous job as a young Bergoglio in this film. But let's start with Jonathan Pryce. He's up for the main prize. He's up for best actor. It's going to be quite the road to hoe. I don't think that there's anybody on Gold Derby or anything like that that predict that Jonathan Pryce will win. But I do think that the Academy does tend to favor biopics more than just about anything else. And I think, is he the only one that's nominated for a biopic in the category?
Yes.
We have Joaquin. We have Adam Driver. We have Leonardo DiCaprio, and who's the Antonio Banderas.
Yep.
So yeah, so he is the only biopic in this category. And again, I don't have any thoughts that he may win this category, but it certainly is that his nomination, I don't think anybody could question the amount of passion and sheer acting ability that he puts into this role. It mentioned on the trivia that he would watch these like hours of YouTube clips of Pope Francis trying to get the exact mannerisms. And it really does seem like he nailed that character and that man. Thoughts on Jonathan Pryce?
Jonathan Pryce is definitely a character actor for the ages. I mean, you know, he goes from playing a religious figure in Game of Thrones in the High Sparrow to playing the Pope. And he does it with such conviction, and he's very believable in what he does. He's so nuanced. Everything that he did, I felt like I was watching Bergoglio, from eating pizza to walking in the Sistine Chapel to helping out Pope Benedict. I mean, it's everything that he did with purpose. But what's really cool is that idea of forgiveness when he's telling his story, he nailed the idea of a sinner. I mean, like, I felt like I was watching a confession, because there was remorse, there was asking. I mean, everything that his past alluded to and how bad he thought it was really conveyed. I don't have any words. I mean, it's like watching, it's like the Sistine Chapel. I mean, if you're watching a film and you can feel that guilt, that's saying something. Bergoglio was a man in his past, when Argentina was taken over by the junta. He basically sided with them to save his life. And he tried to save as many of his Catholic Franciscan priests that he could. But unfortunately, they weren't going to side with people that were killing people. So some people were taken away. And there's a scene in particular. Again, I'm going to allude to this forgiveness. One of those brothers, he says a mass. And he's talking about how there's a moment of sign of peace, and how they hugged, and how he just felt forgiven. In that moment, I felt like I was watching, Francis tell the story, because like his inflection, his tone, the way in his eyes, I mean, it was astonishing to watch. So that's my thought.
Yeah. I really can't add too much about that, about Jonathan Pryce's performance, just magnificent through and through. We definitely need to also talk about Sir Anthony Hopkins, who is also nominated in the Best Supporting Actor category. Again, very tough road ahead of him in that category. I think it would be quite the shock if he were to pull that off. He's up against the likes of Brad Pitt and Brad Pitt and Brad Pitt. It seems like that's probably Brad Pitt's trophy to lose, I think, at this point. But it still is a remarkable performance, and something that you know that Anthony Hopkins is one of those traditional Welsh actors that just really can bring it to a role. But I honestly haven't seen him in this heavy of an acting role in a long time. And so it was really cool to see him and what he was able to do. I mean, I love him as Odin, don't get me wrong, but that's not the same kind of like perplexity to a character to be able to do that than it is to bring Pope Benedict, who really is thought of as in a lot of people's circles, he's thought of as not only a controversial figure, but someone that really did not help the church or took the church in a lot of wrong directions. So in a way, this film also kind of was able to get his side of his worldview out there. I'm taken to a scene where Bergoglio goes to an Italian cafe to watch a football game, and someone sees something about the Pope and mentions that he calls him a Nazi. And that's a pretty historical thing that comes along with Cardinal Ratzinger was part of the Hitler Youth. Now, the Hitler Youth was required of all German children at that time. And so that's one of the critiques that kept coming up and up and up. But this was the first time I was able to see Benedict, because I don't agree with where he took Catholicism and his ideas about shunning gay people and just a lot. I mean, I don't want to get political. I'm more of a Francis kind of guy. But this movie did help me better understand where his views of church dogma come from. And so I think that Anthony Hopkins was able to deliver that in a very well done way. And just the chemistry of Jonathan Pryce, just everything about it. These two really put on a masterclass for us that we get to watch for a $9.99 a month subscription to Netflix. You know, it's pretty cool. But Ryan, talk to me about Mr. Anthony Hopkins.
If you want to see an actor really hone in a troubled spirit, watch this movie. Watching Anthony Hopkins try to be a strong Catholic leader, but knowing that he cannot hear the voice of God anymore, is really powerful to watch in Anthony Hopkins. His struggle with faith is told in the most simplest of mannerisms through him. He's small, he's feeble, he walks with the cane. I mean, it's almost like it's so much weight is on his shoulder, and Anthony Hopkins just nails it, whether it's, you know, how Benedict walked or how he talked or how he felt passionate about something. But I cannot stress enough how Anthony Hopkins nailed this movie, going to a troubled soul, questioning his faith, to someone who is open to change because of a friendship, because of someone who he almost has similar things with. And it starts off small, like eating by himself, keeping that idea of Catholic dogma that you had mentioned, Craig, because the Pope is supposed to eat alone, to being really open to things. And that scene after they have their final conversation, and we'll talk about the theme of forgiveness later, but when he walks out into the people in the Sistine mm-hmm. Chapel was probably the most powerful moment in this movie. It's almost like Ratzinger realized that he's the Pope. And he needs to, I shouldn't say Ratzinger, Pope Francis realizes that he also needs to be a Pope for the people. And he got that way because of Francis. So, you know, it's hard to say who should be supporting, who should not, because these two guys, like you said, Craig, mm-hmm. their chemistry is unbelievably strong. And the way they learn from each other, I mean, it's just awesome. And that scene where he's walking out amongst people taking selfies is really uplifting to watch.
I mean, it's always questionable how film studios decide to place their actors in award consideration. I would say that this one, they probably assumed that they would not get two best actor noms. And then they decided that because we also have the third true actor in this movie, who is portraying a young Bergoglio who would become Francis, that I think that that's why they decided to give that to him. And it's also, I mean, it really is, you kind of skip over much of Benedict's papacy, right? You see right. the election, which I didn't even know that Bergoglio had gotten votes in that election. Uh-huh. That was really interesting. Again, that was about the time, I can't remember exactly when that was. I didn't become Catholic until 2009. So
it was 2004.
Yeah. So it was about 5 years before. And so that's really interesting to me. But, you know, then you really from there follow Bergoglio back to Argentina and back to South America and then to the papacy, essentially. So very, very cool how that's done. But talk to me about the actor that is playing a young Bergoglio in this film.
So you're going to have to remind me how to say the last name, but it's Argentinian actor Juan Minu. What is it?
Is it Minuan?
Minuan, I believe. Sorry if we butchered it.
We are so white. Front row so white.
But this is an Argentinian actor, and he plays the young Bergoglio. He was in Focus with Will Smith not too long ago. But anyway, so in these flashback scenes, we're talking about the his past siding with the junta. You see a guy who's struggling with his own identity. And this guy nailed it, because not only do you see the struggle, but you see him kissing butt, you know, trying to you know, he's playing the political game, but then he's sitting there and he's trying to implore his fellow brothers to stay alive, because that's what we have to do. So that way we can continue God's work. But the inner struggle is just portrayed in this guy's facial features. You know, he's trying to stay strong, but inside he is breaking, and you see it all in his face, because that actor, I don't think he speaks any English during his flashback scenes. It's all Spanish, and it's a great performance.
Well, it even walks you through the moment where that I'm sure a lot of people thinking about going into the seminary have. I mean, he has this love interest, and he was a scientist. He was a chemist prior to going into seminary. And so he has to make that decision because, of course, the vow of celibacy, which is really interesting because Francis, more than any other pope, is actively starting to consider whether or not the vow of celibacy is something that should continue, or should you allow more married popes, or not married popes, my apologies, more married priests. So it's just really an interesting bit of history there. And again, I don't, you know, having not had footnotes in front of me, I don't know exactly what is fabricated for Netflix and what is brought, you know, a little bit more to try to make a better screenplay. But speaking of the screenplay as well, Ryan, tell me about the Academy Award nominated screenwriter for this film.
So it's Anthony McCarten. He is known for previously being nominated for writing The Theory of Everything, another biopic about Stephen Hawking. He also produced The Darkest Hour. So this guy knows his biographies. He also wrote Bohemian Rhapsody. So yeah, biography's up the yin yang, but this guy, he can write. I've seen those three movies, and in and of itself, he really captures the essence of his characters. And if you think about it, all three of those, one best actor. So this guy really knows how to write a character. And that's exactly what you have with the two popes. You have a movie about two gentlemen who movie almost takes over the course of a day, at least the majority of it. And it's just these two people talking. So the fact that he can write and write effectively to the point where people get nominated, he's good at what he does. And so this movie, I really like movies that only really have two people, because that means it's just going to be all about conversation. And when you have a movie about conversation, it's interesting because you really bring the heat. You know, you listen to the topics, and then you listen to how the actors give that, and it really makes you there. But the best part, and like you said, the sets, the fact that he was able to use these sets or build them, really made the film that much more beautiful, because you were getting the splendor that these popes live in. Not that they live in splendor, but I mean, they art. I mean, you see, you're in the Pope's summer retreat where they first meet to sit down and have this conversation. You just see paintings, and it's just awesome. But this is a guy who, Andrew McCartan, he's writing a story about a guy who's ready to give it up. Bergoglio is ready to retire, and Benedict's like, no, here's why. Mm-hmm. And the movie just takes off from there.
Now, tell me, sometimes the Academy is famous for awarding one statue per movie, if they can. They try to spread the wealth. They try to recognize a film in some way. I think that you and I, we're under no illusion that either of these actors are walking away. Do you think that this adapted screenplay has a chance? It's going up against the likes of Jojo Rabbit and Little Women, which Little Women has been done several times. It's also up against The Irishman and Joker, from, of course, being adapted from comic books and graphic novels and whatnot. So what are your thoughts on that, Ryan?
This is the only adapted, like, this category for this year is the one that I'm struggling to pick out a winner. Original is going to be super easy for me. Tarantino. But this one it could pull away, but you've got Little Women. You've got Jojo Rabbit. You've got Joker. It's a toss up, but this one, I don't know. I think it's got something on a level that the other ones don't. And the fact that you've got, it's a movie about two people who are learning how to grow, by forgiving each other, which is what they needed. You know, and I don't know. It has a very powerful message, and I'll jump in now. The main focus of this movie, I believe, is forgiveness. And these two gentlemen had, for each other, because these are two men of God who both had no idea where the direction in their life was going. Bergoglio was ready to retire, and Benedict was ready to throw it in because he had lost his faith. And through their relationship, through this chemistry, we see it slowly evolve to the fact that they were going to use each other as a form of forgiveness. There's that really powerful scene where Benedict is talking about how he lights a candle and puts it out, and the smoke goes downward. And we get this really powerful image after everything is all said and done, that they're sitting there watching a soccer game, and the candle goes out and the smoke rises up. And that's through their friendship, through their forgiveness, able to forgive each other, because Benedict is the one who actually, after Bergoglio confesses all of his crime, how the guilt that he feels, Benedict forgives him despite their differences. Despite their very different viewpoints of how Catholicism should be, Benedict still forgave him. And, yeah. And through that forgiveness, Benedict found himself in his purpose. It was no longer to be the Pope, but it was to be a man of faith, because he learned from Bergoglio. And the way that is written in this film, McCartan did a great job. I think he has a strong chance, but I think there's some steam rolling for Little Women. So, yeah.
Yeah, because Little Women is also in one of those boats where it might not win much of anything else, although I think maybe costume, something like that, could easily go to the costume drama. But, you know, I'll put my neck out there and say that this ought to win. of them because it's just a really well adapted piece. Now, probably the most controversial piece of the film is the fact I mentioned that I was tepid on this film because I didn't know exactly what direction it was going to go with things. I think that someone could equally make a loud argument the other way, saying that this should have been really nailing the church on the sex abuse scandal that has been rocking the church for the past two decades. And how do you feel about how the movie handled, particularly that scene with the, you mentioned it, the confession that is given from Benedict to Bergoglio, and they actually, the audio cuts out during that scene. And when he's talking about the priest who we know from history was molesting children. And so how do you feel the movie handled that? Why do you think that they made that decision?
You know, it's a hot button topic, you know, and it's something, you know, that Spotlight, I think it was 2015 that Spotlight came out. That's something that they touched on. So it's almost
one
like
best picture.
Right. I think the way they handled it was probably the best way for the film. Because at one point, Anthony Hopkins, as Francis said, he knew. And again, we talk about forgiveness. Benedict was like, he knew. And so this was right after Bergoglio's confession. So again, they're seeking solace and forgiveness from each other. But it cuts out because I think that they don't want to overplay it, and good for them, because we know what happened and it was a terrible tragedy. And I don't think they wanted to harp on that. I think they wanted to focus on the forgiveness aspect, and that's what makes the film work. So
yeah, I can see that. Now, one thing we're not talking about, we're only talking three award nominations here. I will say there's some breaking news from Gold Derby. According to the poll of Academy voters that they have, this movie may have received upwards of 48% of the vote towards Best Picture. And of course, had it received 50+1% of the vote, it would have been the 10th Best Picture nominee. Now, just going to cite Gold Derby with that. Not sure if that we can ever confirm that truly, but it seems like, of course, the Academy decided, well, they didn't decide. The way that the voting for Best Picture works is that a movie has to get at least 50% of the votes plus one to be a nomination for Best Picture. And this movie apparently fell maybe 2 or 3% short of that goal to be the 10th Best Picture nominee, because they can have up to 10, and they never have had up to 10 since they went back to that format. So what are your thoughts now hearing that, Ryan?
I think this was a really powerful year for cinema. And this movie should have been nominated for Best Picture. I think there were some other movies in there that maybe not so much. Jojo Rabbit is still a little bit of a head scratcher for me. Don't get me wrong. Jojo Rabbit's still a good movie.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, it's different.
It's different.
Yeah.
I think they just needed a comedy in there, and a comedy like that it's a head scratcher. But this movie was very, how do I want to say this? This movie was very, I don't want to say timeless, but it was very, I can't find the words. It matters in the sense that, you know, it's still relevant. But it's a piece that is driven by its characters, and that's what makes the movie unique. It's not going to be in your face with pro-Catholicism, anti-Catholicism. It's a movie about people.
And it's really interesting too, because we're still living in a world with two popes,
right.
Which, you know, because Pope Benedict is now 93 years old.
Yep.
And it's really interesting. He is authoring a book with someone that is kind of hitting back at some of the things that Francis is doing about being more open to people, being more welcoming as a church and things like that. So it's interesting because this is an evolving relationship as well. Because of course in this film, it's talked about that Benedict says that he's going to go away. He's going to disappear from the public view. It's not that he doesn't want to overshadow the new Pope. And so it seems like, maybe that he's walking that back a little bit here this year. And of course, Francis has been Pope now for several years. So it's just, it's really interesting that this is still kind of an evolving story. And we don't quite know where it's going to go. What we do know is that it is extremely likely that in our lifetimes, there will never be two popes again, because this hadn't happened for 700 years within the church. So just a fascinating piece to learn more about and to see these two perspectives on it. So I do think that I wish it would have gotten in for Best Picture. There's a couple of them I think that we could argue. I think everyone on our thread, we are just gung-ho about Knives Out, and that could have been a fun comedy in place of a Jojo Rabbit. I think that there's at least some chatter about the fact that even though it was only nominated for some visuals, the fact that Endgame made more money than any other film in history and it wasn't nominated as kind of a culmination piece, just a nomination for Best Picture, I think that's a head scratcher as well. But I could see two popes really arguing its way onto that list of Best Picture nominees. And it was just a really thought-provoking piece. It's something I will definitely come back to, because there's some movies you can watch once and you're like, okay, I've done that. And to me, that's like Joker. No need to revisit Joker, but this movie I can come back to again and again because of the themes and the just philosophical nature of how it's written. It's written extremely well. So any other final thoughts on this film, Ryan?
You know, if you don't give it a try just because you think it's going to be about the Catholic Church, you're really missing out on watching two veteran actors really have some of the greatest chemistry I've seen this year, besides Pitt and DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time. These two guys really shine through how they act with each other, how they shine in their own private moments, because you get a lot of time where they're apart, but mainly they're together. If you like performance pieces, watch this, because if you're just going to throw it away because of the topic, you're really missing out on a really great performance film.
And certainly it's a religious movie. I mean, it's Catholic through and through. You learn a lot about the process of choosing a pope. You learn a lot about the daily life of a pope. They talk about God ad nauseum because they're talking about their different philosophies on God. However, if you are someone that's not religious, I do think you would still appreciate the conversation that happens, the discussion amongst the two different worldviews and how they arrive at those worldviews. I still think it's fairly universal, even if you're not Catholic. So I would definitely recommend that you go check out Two Popes if you haven't. I know we've spoiled a bit of it for you, but it's history, right? We know.
It's a full disclosure.
You will learn a bit more about both of these men that are fascinating in their own rights. And I think in a fair world, I think that both Price and Hopkins would have probably a larger shot at this award than they really do at this point. But just well done overall. Interesting that Netflix has so many contenders, particularly Marriage Story and The Irishman, that I wonder had they have spaced this out a bit more and not had three true heavy hitters this year, would they may have put more weight into a campaign behind this? I'm not sure, but they only have so many resources. Even Netflix runs out of money at some point. So we'll have to see where all of their money goes and what awards they will take home on Oscar night. So again, I remind everyone out there that we will be hosting our second annual Front Row Oscar party. So come join us at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield, Illinois on Oscar night. Come watch the telecast with us. We'll be giving out some prizes. We'll be doing some commentary. Last year I got booed because I said that Bradley Cooper was robbed. Thank you, Vanessa, for booing me. Apparently a big Rami Malek fan. So who knows? I'm sure I'll get heckled this year as the host. As the Oscars go hostless once more, we will host you at our second annual Front Row Oscar party. Ryan, any final thoughts, wrap-ups for us?
No, just getting ready for the Oscars. I know I've got a couple more of these full disclosures before we jump into our spotlight. We showcase
awards. What is your this is like cheating, I know, because we're going to be putting out what is your boldest prediction?
My boldest prediction. Well, I mean, let's see, boldest prediction. I call it pretty straightforward. I mean, I would love to see Parasite get Best Picture.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to call it right now.
So, I haven't watched it yet. I just saw 1917, and if that wins, I'll be happy with it. But I do need to see Parasite, obviously.
I think I've seen
six of the nominees now.
Yeah.
And to me, 1917 is far and above the rest at the moment, but I have not seen Parasite yet.
I started 1917, and so far I'm very transfixed. I'm a little bummed that I had to stop it. But between those two, it's going to be close. So, but yeah.
This isn't necessarily a bold prediction. I think the Academy Awards this year are going to fall into some well-worn narratives. I think that Joaquin Phoenix has had it in the bag since July when the movie came out and it was premiered at various film festivals. However, my bold prediction is that I'd really love to see Adam Driver walk away with that trophy instead. That is a sneak peek of my podcast that I'll be doing later on Marriage Story. So,
I mean, other things that I've got, I'm going to do Parasite and Jojo Rabbit. So you'll see those full disclosures before we get into the spotlights. And then I'm going to be working very closely with our tech wizard, Google form master, Aaron McCabe, as we get ready for The Row guesses the Oscars. So I'll be tallying those votes as I predominantly try to kick all your butts. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been a wonderful evening. I guess I should end by saying peace be with you.
And also with you.
Awesome. And to all of you out there, please go and find us on any social media, the Front Row Network. You can find us on Twitter, Front Row Reviews with a Z, especially on Oscar night. Follow along with that. We'll be doing some live reactions along the way for our folks in the front row that can't make it down to Springfield. They're going to be kind of handling the tech side of things for us and tweeting and things like that. And then, of course, you can also find us on NPR Illinois as well. And thank you to NPR Illinois for having us on as a community partner podcast with them. But for the Front Row Network, I am Craig.
And I am Ryan.
And we will see you real soon in the Vatican City. Maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know. Have you ever been? Trip.
Let's go.
Group trip. Let's get to the Vatican. All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Night.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.